You are listening to John Diard's Life Spa, your premier source for health news and Ayurveda, where modern science meets ancient wisdom.
Welcome to our call. Thanks all for joining us. I'm here with child development expert Jeff Cheely. So great to have you here. Thank you for coming. I've known Jeff for a very, very long time. He's the director of the Cheely Colorado Camps. It's a camp that I've sent all my kids, except for my oldest one. We didn't know Jeff then. She's the one who runs my business here, actually. But anyway, I sent all my kids to this camp, and I just feel like there's such important information that he can share with us about what's happening to our kids in this day and age. You know, there was a CNN special that came out a couple of weeks ago talking about social media with kids, and 13-year-olds on average are checking their social media like 100 times per day. And it's all about for these kids, you know, like 61% of these kids are doing it to see if their Instagram was liked or commented on, to see if they were approved of, to see if someone was talking mean about them or bad about them. The basic kind of result of that CNN kind of report was that this is a way kids put themselves out there to get approval, to get security, to be safe and secure, or not. And we're hardwired as children, as young infants, to need and want the approval of our mom and dad. If we didn't care about our mom and dad watching over us, we would have wandered in the jungle a long time ago, gotten eaten by lions, and there'd be no people here. So clearly, we're hardwired for the need of approval, and we create a personality based on getting our mom and dad to like us. Maybe it was a straight-A student, a class clown, or whatever. We create that, and we project that on the screen, sometimes for an entire lifetime. And the problem is that we replace mom and dad shortly thereafter with money, power, fame, a job, candy, Starbucks, food, shopping. I mean, we created a culture simply designed to get approval from mom and dad. And some of that has created some real problems, that kids are still desperate for the approval of either mom and dad or their job or their career or their boyfriend or putting themselves out on social media. Some kids literally taking 100 to 200 selfies before they find the exact right one before they'll post it on Instagram. That's a little bit extreme, I think. And I think in Ayurveda, which is kind of, you know, the traditional system of medicine that sort of I draw a lot of this kind of authenticity from, it was all about realizing that we're going to create a personality that needs approval from our parents. But then you got to break it. And this is why I wrote the article this morning about the rite of passage. Like, what is the rite of passage that kids go through in this day and age? It doesn't exist unless it's a bat mitzvah or a bar mitzvah, which is the only, there may be others, but for the most part, that's the only one that sort of remains. That's a real major event. And I was a Catholic. I got confirmed, but it was like, it wasn't any big deal. It was like an afternoon, you know, nothing really happened. There aren't any real rites of passage. And I think what Jeff has seen since 1921, when this camp started, you didn't see all that. But was that these kids are being put in situations where they actually experience a rite of passage. And the magic, when these kids are forced to be themselves. You know, in our culture, we just replace mom and dad, right? But in the animal kingdom, if you're a leopard, you know, you reach a certain age, mama leopard says, I'm going south, you're going north. If I see you again, you know, maybe we'll hug, maybe I'll eat you, I don't know. But it's over, I'm not watching over you any longer. You're on your own. Stop thinking I'm going to be there and approve of you and watch over you. That's like a magical thing. You know, when I was a kid and our dads were alive, they would go to the army and they would do that rite of passage thing. And there was something there that really made them into young men and stuff. And not that I don't know the answer. You know, Jeff knows a lot about this. And I want this interview to be sort of like, you guys have ideas how we can replicate that and give our kids what they need, which is to be independent human beings and let the truth of them out, the power, the joy, the passion for life out, and not be constantly worried about what other people think of me, what I'm wearing, what I'm dressing, how can I get the next dopamine kind of reward chemistry hormone hit, you know, more shopping, more stuff, and get these kids to experience the truth of what life is really about. And so much of that is what we call a nature deficiency disorder. Kids are not getting into nature, and there's magic that happens there in the woods when kids get out there without parents on their own, sort of risking their lives, in a controlled way. So I want to introduce Jeff. Jeff is a very good friend of mine. He's the director of the Chile, Colorado camps. And I got to tell you, what they're doing up there is amazing. And this is not a commercial for Jeff's camp, although I think it's phenomenal. It's really more of a commercial for camps in general, or anything we can do to get our kids out and experience, and you know, what it's like to be on your own and sort of take some risks, because our kids are just way too coddled to fail a little bit and not succeed, but not be judged by their peers because they didn't make the team, you know, but somehow really get them to grow up, you know, a little bit. So anyway, Jeff, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Tell us all a little bit about what's happening at your camp, and there's some amazing things that you guys do that I don't know that all camps do, but I'm curious to if you could share that, and then we can kind of figure out how we can all sort of make that happen for our kids.
Chile was started by my great grandfather Frank Chile in 1921.
1921. Wow.
And the story, the family lore, is that in 1921 he started the camp because he felt children were getting cityfied. So this is in 1921.
Right.
And then in 1943, we added a couple other properties, again, because he wanted to keep that pioneer spirit alive. And he, at a young age, in his 20s, was taking children in Colorado Springs, up into the mountains of Colorado Springs, to get them out of the city and just kind of into nature. So it's always been a part of kind of our family heritage and our family legacy that, you know, we believe in the impacts of getting out there. And, you know, I think amazing things happen for children, especially in today's day and age, when you go out on a backpack, you get out in the middle of nowhere, you can't check in on your Facebook page. You're not worried about, oh my gosh, this is beautiful sunset. I mean, when you're watching the sunset, you're enjoying the sunset. You're not figuring out, how do I get my camera at the right angle to, you know, capture me and the sunset.
Right.
And then, you know, you get there at 4 o'clock and you have to cook dinner. And that's really all that's on your agenda compared to at home. And I mean, we only have a 2, 4, and 6-year-old, so we haven't hit that, you know, pick them up from school and shove a granola bar in their mouth while you're, you know, sprinting to soccer practice, and you got to get them right out of soccer practice to get to piano and then home and eat really fast and, you know, do all that. But
this is amazing. Now, I know that there's something that you guys do, and it's called the Code of Living, mm-hmm. that the kids actually create, but when they come to camp, they come for like a month.
Correct.
And they actually create their own code that they all choose to live by, right? Tell us about that.
So the second day of camp, we divide up into units, kind of like little villages. So each unit is 50 to 65 campers, 4 to 6 cabins. And so those units get together and we talk about if we're going to live together in a community, in a successful community for 27 days, what are the values that we need to adhere to, abide by, to make it work. If I'm going to share a bunk with you, I mean, most children are, you know, maybe you're sharing your room with your brother, your sister, maybe you have your own room, maybe you're sharing a bathroom, maybe not. And now they're coming into an environment where they've got, you know, 15 other campers in a cabin and they're sharing a bathhouse with 60 kids. I need to trust you that if I leave my new sunglasses on my dresser, that they're going to be there tomorrow. And I need to believe that, you know, if we're going on a backpack, I can't carry everything I need. Or if I'm going on a horseback, I can't take everything. You're going to have to take the tent poles and the fly, and I'm going to take the tent, and you're going to take Monday and Tuesday's food, and I'm taking Wednesday and Thursday's food. And so, you know, how are we going to function together? And the neat thing is that Frank didn't, in 1921, say, here's 7 values that I think children need to, you know, these are the 7 values that are going to create a successful adult. He realized that if I had a say in it, I'm going to buy into it and realize, okay, for me, because of where I'm coming from, maybe integrity is important. For someone else, it may be, you know what, seize the day. Live every day like it's your last day and really kind of like your next speaker. Let's enjoy every day. That may be what's important.
These are the kids making.
These are the kids, yeah. So it's not a 21-year-old staff member. It's not. And so if it's done right, the 60 campers, every single one of them can look at that list after it's kind of compiled down and boiled down in different ways. And they can say, you know what, that third trait was, you know, I had a say in that third trait. And so then they're going to buy into it. And so we weave that into the entire experience where a week in you talk about, okay, let's, in a community setting, let's talk about who's living up to the code and give me some examples of how that's being done.
And also, the kids write this code of living, and then every kid signs it, right?
Yeah.
In their like age group thing, right?
Yeah. And we see them when we travel around the country. I mean, we'll see them on people's bulletin boards. We'll see them hanging in their rooms. I mean, I still have tucked away. I have some of my code of living from when I was a camper at 16 years old.
Wow.
And so they just mean something to them. And, you know, I think a lot of our campers love getting away from home and away from that, you know, I'm constantly being evaluated in a way.
So I want to ask you a question, a hard question, because I don't understand how this happens. But in school, kids go to school and everybody's judging them. And there's like the social pressure to be cool and to dress the right way and have the right stuff. At camp, all of a sudden, that's gone. Like everybody is like on an equal playing field. They're all like sort of, and then there's like campers who've been there a couple of years and new campers, mm-hmm. But that doesn't ever seem to matter. They seem to accept each other in some way that allows them to feel safe inside. And I think fundamentally, like I said in the beginning, the fundamental driver for why we want mom and dad to approve of us is to be safe and secure. And I believe the fundamental driver for us as we go through life is to feel safe and secure. And to get approval is sort of one way we sort of make that happen. It's not maybe the best way, but it is what kids want, is to be safe and secure. And then I would say the delicate petals of their flower can begin to then open if they feel safe. But if they're feeling judged, or I can't make the team, or I'm not as good as that guy, and there's cliques and going, how do you erase that from a playing field when you have over 300 and something kids up there?
You know, some of it is just in the culture that's been created over the years. It's neat. It's almost, remember Breakfast Club, that movie that was out in the 80s? You know, it was just a hodgepodge of kids that all came together that became friends.
Yeah.
And I think because you constantly have that, you learn to get past that. You know, I'm the captain of the soccer team and you're on the debate team and you're in the band and, you know, you're this, you're that. That's not what it's about. So...
Yeah.
Because it's more about who they are and what they bring, and the fact that I'm going to have to depend on you, whether it's I'm alternating with you in archery or riflery, or I'm, you know, working with you in a crafts project, whatever. I think I'm depending on you, and I'm sleeping in the same cabin. You know, we're living all day long in that environment, and you're not going to go back and, you know, put something on Facebook. I feel sorry for the life that children are dealing with in today's day and age.
It's overwhelming, you know? For them. And I think it's so hard for us to turn the technology off because it's such a part of the culture that it's really hard for parents to know, you know, how much screen time or what's good, what's bad. And nobody even knows really, you know, how much is good, how much is bad. I remember my son Jensen, who's 15 now, he came back from camp and he said, "Dad, I'm telling you, we are on top of a 14,000 foot peak, and it was this cliff that was like this, and there was like on the peak of the cliff we were crawling across the top, and it was death on one side and death on the other, and it was windy, and I was hanging on for my dear life, and we made it across. I can't tell you, man, it was most, you know." And I'm going like, "Whoa, Jeff." I was picking up my kid. I said, "Jeff, like, are these kids safe here? I was like, is this really happening?" And what did you tell me?
Huh?
And you told me, you said that they're, you tell me what you said.
Well, I mean, there's some of that is the perceived risk.
Yeah.
You know, I think technical climbing, you know, on a rope is great because it feels you're out of your comfort zone. I think we grow when we're out of our comfort zone. You know, we were just on vacation and I was glad to get back in the office today to have a routine and a rhythm and all that. But that's not where we grow.
Yeah,
you know, I think we grow when we've pushed it a little bit.
Well, they definitely are on the comfort. And what you told me that day a couple of months ago when we did that, we said that we've all been up on top of those mountains. They think that they're risking their life, but it's all been tested. It's all been, we know that they're safe. But for him, it was a rite of passage for sure. He came down this year at 15 years old. He came down a changed person from camp. I mean, he's became a man. He's just all about schoolwork and all about taking it seriously and all about being, there's values that happen. And it's not just what you guys provide. I think you set up this code of living. The kids have to live by these values and they buy in. But I think they buy in because there's no parents around. The counselors are like, they're just like a couple of years older. They're really just kids, you know, and they're well-trained and everything. But they don't look at those counselors as adults at all. They look at those counselors as older brothers,
yeah,
who are sort of, you know, they're not like the parental supervision. They're like my, I mean, Jensen, these are my, those counselors are my brothers.
Yeah.
I love those people. So he had a, like, a, you know, like the whole big brother thing. It's sort of like that. And then it gives them big brothers watching. I feel safe. I can take this risk. This whole camp is, this whole tent, tribe, cabin, all my buddies are here to protect me. They got my back. I feel more safe in this outdoor crazy environment than I've ever felt safe in my life. And I got to tell you, that to me is the magic ingredient for raising your kids. How can you get your kid to feel safe? Not just by mom and dad coddling them, because now there's all these books about, you know, the gift of failure and how we don't let our kids ever fail or ever, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that what happens when kids are alone is they really are allowed to risk themselves and fail. But if they fail and don't make it, like on a 14er, if the clouds come in, the snow comes, you can't make it. So you're going to have to come back down, and maybe the whole day was just
hiking. Well, and I think the lesson there is that it's good to fail. I mean,
right.
There's a lot of times when they, you know, they have a destination. We'll do some, you know, third and fourth week. There's some long hikes. They're hiking an entire ridge, and it's eight peaks. And, yeah, there's some days where the clouds come in at 10, 11 o'clock. You're not making it, and you failed. But you know what? You learned something, and our children these days are being evaluated all the time. It's not where, when I went to college, it was like, you know, early junior year, you started thinking about where you were going to go to school. Now it's eighth grade, ninth grade, and you can't try anything that's too risky, because if you fail, then there goes your opportunity to,
right,
you know, and
to being judged along the way. And here in these environments, they're not being judged.
We're being judged, I think, as parents. My sister reminded me, she went and saw the lady that wrote the book Free Range Parents. I don't know if you've heard of that. She was the one that got in trouble, I think, for putting her children on the subway in New York. And she brought up the point that, I mean, most of us, I know my wife read the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting. Mm-hmm. And there's a line in there about every morsel of food you put in your body when you're pregnant may impact your child. Well, I mean, that's a lot of stress as a parent.
Yeah.
You know, if I eat this cookie that I'm dying to eat, I may have tweaked my child's life by doing that. So there's this fear, I think, as parents that, oh my gosh, I may discipline them in the wrong way, or I may give them the wrong piece of advice, mm-hmm. and now I've had this huge impact on my child. So I know our ego, I see it. I know with my son, I watching football as a 6-year-old, I'm probably more bummed when they lose than he is. You know, they get done and they're like, hey, coach, did we win? You know, I'm like, no, you got beat 35-0. But and I'm kind of bummed, and he's, you know, he's on to the next thing.
You know, so when I wrote my first book, Body, Mind, Sport, we did some research, and it was all about, a lot about how kids are, you know, having terrible experiences. In one Lewis Harris poll, 50% of American kids experienced their first major failure in life as a sports failure, which is a pretty, you know, and I know when I was a kid, you didn't climb the ropes. It was a public humiliation. You know, if you were picking teams, you were the last guy picked. It was like a lot of kids just got orthodontist appointments every Wednesday at 9 o'clock because they didn't want to ever do gym class because it was so humiliating, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that one of the things that happens at camp is that kids are, well, now one of the studies showed that a very recent study just came out a couple weeks ago was that 70% of kids by the age of 13 have quit organized sports, have dropped out. You know, and I'm going like, that's 70% of kids dropping out of organized sports. Why do you think that's happening? What do you think is the undercurrent where kids are at 13, 70%? That number just blew my mind. Yeah, Any ideas?
I mean, I think it's, there's more and more pressure, I think, to make the team, to excel.
Yeah.
I think I just heard a gentleman, Joe Ehrman, who is, they call him America's coach. He just wrote a book called Inside Out Coaching. And he is trying to teach coaches that our job, if we're a coach, is to develop children.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're developing manhood, it's all about developing these boys into men and teaching that development.
Yeah.
If you have 13 kids on your team, there's a pretty high chance that none of those 13 are going to play collegiately, let alone professionally. So let's not kid ourselves that you're developing, you know, you're going to send these kids off to all the Ivies and all the best schools because they're playing sports. So And if we all, I think if we could get the dads and the moms around the country to, when we're coaching, accept that, you know what, yeah, our goal is to win the game. No question you want to win the game if you're competing, but our purpose as a coach is to develop these young men and women into better people and teach values and teach character. And Jackson's coach does a great job of it. This guy, Matt, understands that his job is just to develop these kids. They're six. You're lucky if half of them are listening.
It's easier when they're younger, but when they start getting into, like, you know, a lot of kids at 8 years old or 9 years old, they start, you know, they're all of a sudden the club teams come into play where they travel, and the peer pressure to be on a club team and travel is so huge that just playing for the local YMCA team isn't really cool enough. So they now they have, like, you know, five levels or three levels or four levels of club teams, all of which travel. Parents generally don't want to take their 8-year-old to Las Vegas to play in some dumb tournament where it's like a lot of everything, expense for the parents, and it just becomes such a big deal. But if the kid is on that team, they're not cool enough. Again, they're being judged, and they're feeling that they're not going to be good enough if they do that. I think that that's the kind of pressure. One study, they showed that they gave these kids a questionnaire of what they liked about sports. And winning was 48.
Really?
It was the 48th thing that they actually liked. So it wasn't for them about winning. Now, the parents, I mean, my son, who was on a club team, and because he really wanted to be, and he probably shouldn't have been, but playing at the YMCA, where it was non-competitive, wasn't really, in our area, that's what the non-competitive team is, wasn't really cool enough. And there was a mom who was screaming at him from the sidelines, a mom, telling him where to play and what he was doing wrong and everything. And that was it for him. He was like, I'm not doing that again. This mom is screaming at me in front of everybody, public humiliation. That's the kind of stuff I think that is, you know, maybe a little bit out of whack. And we think we should also say that sports, for a lot of kids, you know, being competitive is who they are.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and I think that for the competitive sports and the club teams, it really works for them because that is who they are. And I'm not knocking it. But a lot of kids, when you have 70% of the kids dropping out by the age of 13, a lot of those kids, that ain't who they are. Mm-hmm. They're in a club team, but that's not really who they are or where they should be. Mm-hmm. They should be maybe, and that's our job as parents, is to say, how can I find something that my kid loves, wants to do every day, maybe even excels in or is pretty good at, not the best, but just, you know, loves, and thrives in, you know, and it may not be, you know, be the athlete, you know, may not be the best musician. It might be that they love to draw, you know, and let that be their thing. It's so important, I think, for parents to give the kids the space to develop who they are and then to be empowered to be that. And I think that our culture is all about, I need my kid to be an athlete, I need my kid to be a musician, or whatever it might be. And there's so much pressure on these kids to perform. And like you said, the pressure is there all through college, all through high school, all through middle school, through high school, to perform, to get to that final goal to go to college. And we were talking about this earlier, but kids who go to camp, a lot of kids that I know who go to college, they come back the next year and they go to a local college because they blow up or they can't handle it or they don't like being away from their friends or they miss home or whatever the reason mm-hmm. might be. Could be the wrong school. But campers, you were telling me there were some reports that showed that campers actually do better, right?
They're just starting to do some research on, do children that go to a camp experience, that leave home and go to a camp experience, are more successful when they go off to college. And it's because they've had to make decisions on their own. They've had to deal with bad decisions. You know, for us, we do signups every week. And if you choose that you want to go on the hike the first week on Thursday and you don't like that hike and it's really hard, that's fine. Next week, you don't have to choose that. But you live through it, and it may not have been real fun. But I think the young adults that have had an opportunity to be out there and make decisions on their own. You know, there's all these stories now. We you know, being in the camp industry and being in youth development, you know, we go to the national conference every year, and it's speakers that are talking about what's changing in children. And so we get a lot of this data and a lot of these examples of how are smartphones impacting kids. There's this constant tether with kids and their parents. You go to the store and you're choosing shoes and they're taking pictures of the shoes saying, Mom, should I get these? We went to the store and bought the shoes and, You know, you may have had to answer because you spent too much on them, but
right.
And so that is that constant tether has made them more dependent on their parents. And I think there is, like you said, there's that codependence on that, that the parents yeah. like having that. I mean, I think as much benefit occurs for families, as much the benefit is for the parents. I mean, we tell our parents, we've started doing more work with our parents to say, your children are going to be gone for 27 days. What are you going to do? Don't take this time to book that long business trip that you've got. You know, go out to dinner, come home and hang out and like do stuff that you want to do with your spouse that you don't have that opportunity. And I love hearing stories when families have sent all their kids away to camp, whether it's the same camp or different ones. And if they can coordinate it where they have a week to 10 days of, I mean, you had that opportunity where you guys traveled
two years ago.
And it was like,
we dropped the kids and you had to tell us to slow down as we were driving out because we had a plane to catch.
That's right.
Absolutely. It was a great time for him. It was the first vacation after with six kids, first vacation that my wife and I ever took alone, ever. And we had the best time ever. We just got to know each other after 28 yeah. years. It was phenomenal. I think there's two things I want to talk about. One is parents can use that time, but also we talked earlier about how parents have to, and what I want to ask, and I want to ask the listeners who are watching, you know, to chime in, because my goal tonight is to think, I think camp is great. I think all kids should go. I think it's an amazing experience, and not all kids can go. I get that. But boy, may there be a Knowles course or send them away for a week here and there. Get your kids away from you so they can be on their own in the wilderness by themselves. Magical things happen. We know that when you're in the wilderness, chemistry changes, your microbes change, oxytocin levels, which are hormones that make you live longer and be more giving and loving and joyful and kind in life, they actually increase. You get less dopamine reward chemistry. You're not all about reward, people liking me, loving me, caring for you. You're not in that chemistry anymore. Things happen in the wilderness that don't happen at home in school. Part of that is the parents and what we can do as parents to model better behavior for our kids. And so much like you had said, was how can the parents take care of themselves better so they're more inside themselves, more. Remember Billie Jean King used to tell Martina when I used to coach with them or talk when I used to work with them to tell Martina, you know, be within yourself, be more within yourself. Hmm. And as parents, a lot of us are like, you know, we're just like so many things going on, 90 miles an hour, we just race, race, race. But when you can be still and be calm, the kids feel safe in that stillness and calm. When the kids go into the wilderness, they feel the stillness and calm. They feel safe in that stillness and calm. Creating an environment in the house where kids are sitting down to dinner together with mom and dad makes them feel safe and calm. You know, so much of it's fundamentally to make the kid feel safe so they can feel safe to open them up and let, you know, let themselves out. Share crazy things that they did with mom and dad, things that are going on with school that mom and dad might judge. You know, the kid feels safe to be free, to be vulnerable, to let the truth out. I think those are valuable things that the camp environment does. And these kids talk to each other mm-hmm. in ways that they don't never talk maybe to their parent or to a schoolmate. They have this bond that happens. So I think it's really important. I want to, you know, ask the readers, you know, well, the other thing I want to talk about is rites of passage. How can we as parents today in this crazy, dangerous world we live in, create rites of passage for our kids so they can at least, maybe we're watching them through the window or the car door or whatever, you know, like, you know, make your kid walk to school, but you're like, you're driving behind
him,
whatever it is, you know, but making sure that they have experience in their life where they're taking risks that develop them as, you know, I think balanced human beings, don't you think?
Yeah. One thing that you reminded me of when you were talking about that, I was talking to my mom on the way up here and she was talking about how children are constantly trying to create order out of the chaos that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I saw, I mean, I thought about it when she was talking about this. We were down on vacation this last week and, you know, we were on the beach and the boys were just having, they could have been there all day long. Our 2-year-old was a little scared of all the waves, but
yeah.
And so I think one of the things that we can do as parents for our children is to try and have as much calm and as much order in our house as possible. And yeah, that's how we come in. I can't remember a friend of mine or if I read it somewhere. It may have been Kristen Race is a friend of mine and she talks a lot about mindfulness. And she talked about parking in the garage for 2 minutes before you walk in the house, mm-hmm. you know, and like calming yourself down before you go in. Because I think with phones now, we drive home and we're on the phone and you're getting another 15 minutes of work in. So you didn't have that time to decompress before you went into your house, and you're still at that craziness level. So I think that's one gift that we can... I've got another friend of mine that puts... I mean, his phone goes in the mudroom when he walks in. He's got a place that he puts it, and he's like, that's good.
I know a lot of parents have kids who play sports, play soccer, and, you know, and I had, you know, a couple of kids who played sports. One did really, really well. And, you know, it was from the time he was preschool to the time he was, you know, finishing high school, it was practices 3-4, you know, 5 times a week. Yeah. There was no time. Every weekend was at a soccer game or a soccer tournament.
I don't know how you guys did it with 6. I mean,
well, that was crazy.
You
all
just take turns,
everybody
right?
sort of was like, watch, you know, my son Mason play. And you know, we felt it was so important for him to get out of the game one year that he didn't play club soccer for a year. And he went out and did Chile. He went to your camp, and it was an incredible experience for him to just see something non-competitive. It was just so different for him to be in the wilderness. And he's one of those kids, out of our 6 kids, he's like got all most of the athletic genes, and he's the athlete. And he became actually, not to brag, but he was the soccer player, the 5A, which is the size of the school, Colorado State champion. So he was like best player in Colorado, or, you know, one of the best. And he took a year off to go to Chile and came back, and they still won the state champion. He still won the 5A player of the year. Didn't matter at all. It made him a better player by taking some time off. I think parents are so afraid that their kid has to go, 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 push, push, push. They play in the winter. They play in the summer. They play in the spring. They play at night and midnight. They make them in the middle of the night, kick the ball. And it's crazy, right? And I think that parents have to realize that it's okay for them to do something else. It rounds them out, gives their body a break to heal so they don't get so many injuries. I mean, my prior career before I started doing this, I was a sports chiropractor and worked with the New Jersey Nets, did all the rehab. And it worked with a lot of kids here in Boulder and athletes. Unbelievable amount of injuries that these kids have from overuse. You know, and I think that from that perspective, and it's so scary for a parent to say, well, like when we took my son out of club for a year, people were like, what? What?
He's going to lose his edge.
He's not playing? Why not? It's something. What? And like, dude, he wants to go to camp.
Yeah.
I mean, why is that so bad? This is not the end of the world, you know? They won the state championship. Not one of those kids is going to be a professional athlete.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, what was Joe shared? I saw this guy speak a couple weeks ago, and he said 3% of kids will play collegiately.
Yeah.
Not pro, but collegiately. Yeah. So, yeah, are we trading their entire childhoods in for this possibility? And then, I mean, I loved that I played soccer growing up. They played in high school. They were great memories, and I think it's very important. And I mean, there's a lot of value that comes out of that. A lot of self-image, a lot of bonding, and I mean, the brotherhood that happens on a team. When we were at the presentation on Joe, we got into small groups, and a friend of mine had his son there, and we were talking about what really do you want, or what do the kids even want? Back to your study, this friend of mine, Keith, was giving his son grief about, you know, what do you want? And he didn't know. And he's like, come on. You know, it's a lot of it's the brotherhood. And so he's like, yeah, kind of. He goes, I can't get you out of the locker room after a game. You know, he's a hockey player. And, you know, 45 minutes later, they're still joking around. And I mean, that's valuable. Yeah. That's more important about that brotherhood and learning how to have those relationships than, did you?
Absolutely. And trust me, and don't get me wrong, I'm not in any way knocking sports. Like I said, for certain kids, it's the best thing. But I just think that what's missing is what I experienced my kids go through at camp, and it was something magical happened. It was wilderness, it was that calm, it was that parents are gone, I'm being guided by older brothers, and we're taking risks, but they're controlled, but they didn't know that, and they're having a rite of passage, and they're becoming little adults, and they're becoming, and by trusting each other, they're forced to let something out that's more truthful to them. And instead of being projecting on the screen what I think everybody wants to like or likes, that doesn't happen in the wilderness when kids get together. They're sort of forced to somehow, the magic thing that happens there is these kids, and it doesn't make sense why they would do it, but they do it. They take off their armor and they become vulnerable. Yeah. and they connect with each other and they connect with nature. I remember one of my older sons, you know, he ended up going to Chile, got completely changed, majored in outdoor leadership, and wanted to just live in the woods. And we would come home, you know, he was in high school in his senior year, and the house would smell like smoke. And we would just say, oh, no, that's just awesome. He's making fires, rubbing sticks together. And he said, I need to make 100 of them to be a master fire starter with sticks. And that was what he would do. So he went to college for that, ended up, but he was passionate about it. And the experience there is what gave him that passion. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm talking about, is kids just somehow get him that passion, that spark, you know. And luckily that spark didn't burn our house down, but it didn't. And so he ended up going to college for outdoor leadership. He transferred to writing. Then he got into film. Then he got into politics. Now he's doing a master's degree in Wales in the UK in political theory.
Wow.
I mean, he doesn't care about the wilderness anymore. I mean, he still loves it because it's still in his blood. But it was that passion that got him on track, that opened him up to learn and to take information in, and he just followed his heart from there. There's magical things that happen, I think, when kids are free to be together. And I can't explain, what is Boy Scout camp? Or there's so many different choices, even locally, that you can do. But
well,
I think it's something
living,
to look at.
It's also living in the moment. I mean, you look at a lot of the programs that we do, you can't be planning ahead and thinking about what you're going to do tomorrow or what you're going to do next week or what happened last week. I mean, when you're technical climbing, you have to be thinking about that next handhold. When you're riding a horse, you're developing a part of your brain that's very important. You're right in the moment, and you're connected and living. And when you're standing up on a peak at sunrise, I mean, it's amazing.
I'll tell you a great story. A lot of my listeners who have gotten my DVDs that we did with Gayam, there's videotapes of my daughter and I, Devaki, doing yoga together. A lot of people do yoga with us. It's called the everyday yoga. And I hear a lot of people they love, and Devaki is incredible. She's incredible. She's a yoga teacher, and I did it with her. And she went to Chile camp, and she was young, maybe 12 or something like that. And she was at that middle school age, you know, where she was really embarrassed about her name, Devaki. And so she said, "Can I go to? If I go to camp, I'll go, but I don't want to go as Devaki. I want to go as Amanda." So we said, "What?" She said, "I don't want to have all these girls, Devaki, and try to explain my name and all this. You didn't want to do that. I just want to be Amanda." So she went to camp, and we asked you, and you guys approved. I can't believe you said yes. I think maybe we paid you off or something. And you said, "Sure, she can be Amanda." And it was funny because Jeff knew her, and Brooke, and everybody at Chile knew that Devaki's name wasn't Amanda. And everybody fell in love with Amanda. And she had the greatest experience of her life there. And at the end, you know, there's these campfires at the end where everybody bonds and they share these incredible, heart-wrenching stories about what they did and how much they care for each other and love. And it was like, Devaki, you lied to them. You're not Amanda, you're Devaki, you know? So she, from her own side, sort of realized that she had to, you know, get up in front of everybody, what, 60 girls, and tell what she did. And we were allowed to be there and just sort of watch this from a side. I got to tell you, it was the most tear-wrenching thing I ever saw in my life, and the most beautiful thing. And the girls hugged her and loved her. And it was like that kind of rite of passage for her, because she was always embarrassed about what people thought. Yeah. And she realized that I can be myself, and they're going to love me. I just can't tell you enough, as raising 6 kids, those are the magic moments that defined them and gave them the confidence to go out there and take on the next chunk of the world, you know? Just an amazing experience.
I think the hard thing about the rite of passage is that really we, as parents, we can't be involved in that for it to be a successful rite of passage.
Yeah.
You know, you have to send them out. You have to let them do their own thing. I mean, our oldest son Jackson is 6, and I can remember multiple times of him doing something he was very scared to do, and he walked taller, and he was proud of himself.
Sure.
And, you know, a lot of those, I think it's hard because, you know, I'd love to give the 5 things that parents can do, and part of that is we have to send them out.
back off a little bit somehow.
Yeah, send them away. And
so I want to ask you all if you have any suggestions of ideas that you can share with us, as we're sort of brainstorming, what can we as parents today in this culture do? How can we give these kids that sort of that freedom, even if you leave them at the skate park for their, whether, you know, rollerblading or skateboarding by themselves, or let them, you know, with friends walk and take, or, yeah, I know it's scary, you know, in our culture for kids and to leave them.
Ride the bike to school.
You know, for sure. That kind of thing, I think it's a big deal. And I think for a lot of parents, we can do more to give them that chance to be a little bit more independent and take a risk, even though we're like, I should watch them and drive them to school every day and pick them up or whatever, or let them walk home or things like that. So I'm going to check in with some questions we have here that might be here. And if anybody has any questions, you can type them in. Or if you have any questions you want to talk to us, I'd love to hear from you. Just push star two. And I do have one here from Washington, D.C. Are you there? From Washington, D.C., are you there? And if anybody else has a question, just push star two. Are you there, Vincent? Can you hear me, Vincent?
Never mind.
Okay. So I think what's happening is his thing was on. But if anybody has any questions, you can just push star two if you have questions. Or any ideas about how we can actually give our kids a rite of passage, and please type in any questions at all that you might have as well. Here's a question: at what age might you be able to determine a child's dosha? It's a great question about kids' body types. We were talking about that earlier. You know, each kid has a different constitutional body type. You know, Vata children are kind of colder and dry and very governed by air, extremely sensitive in nature. So they have a lot of sensitivity, a lot of radar. They feel everything. When they're in school, they feel they're aware of what they're doing and they're aware of what the five kids around them are doing. And that gives them a lot of radar and a lot of sensitivity. And Pitta kids are fiery and aggressive, and they're that kind of sports-driven, you know, competitive kid who they don't really sort of care so much what other people are doing or thinking about them. And then there's the easygoing, kind of a little bit heavier set, hypometabolic kapha child, we call them the spring body type, who are easygoing and mellow. And they're the ones, I think, that tend to get, I mean, the Vata air sort of winter types, they're very sensitive, and they internalize a lot. I think as parents, we have to be aware of who they are. And if they're very, very sensitive, how do we create an environment that's super safe for them and not put them in situations where they're going to be shut down or judged by super strong, controlling, competitive Pitta kids? The Kapha kids are usually, you know, slower metabolically. They tend to gain weight. So they're the ones who aren't going to, you know, run the mile under 10 minutes to pass the class. I know in one, I used to teach for my first book, some private schools had a body type at their kids in gym class so they can direct the kids towards sports that are more suited to their type. Instead of testing them all on the president's council, which is basically for the Pitta body type. And this one girl came in, she had tears in her eyes because she had trained to run the mile under 10 minutes to pass the class. And she had done it last year, and she finished it like in 12 minutes, and she was so humiliated. So she trained for this year, and she trained and trained and trained, and she came in and she did it in 10 minutes and 30 seconds. And she came into the coach's room, and she sat down, and she said, Dr. Diard, do you think you could write me a note so I never have to go to gym class again? And I said, well, I don't know if we can do that, but what we can do is we're designing programs for you guys to be involved with sports more suited for your type than just everybody does the same thing. And they were really loved. They really caught on. And I came back maybe, I don't know, 9 months later or something like that. And I saw her and I said, hey, how's it going? She came up with a big smile on her face. And she said, I just came back from the regional championships as a race walker. I was like, what? And she said, yeah. She goes, and I just joined the basketball team. I said, what? And she goes, yeah, the little Vata Pitta kids, little fast, quick, they dribble and pass. I get rebounds. Because she was a big girl, right? She wasn't going to run the mile under 10 minutes to pass the class. She couldn't do that, but she could get rebounds, you know. And she all of a sudden, because of that experience of getting you know, make the regional champions as a race walker, which was a sort of something that she could do forever, you know, because it was her type and her constitutional strength. And then she had the confidence to then go on a basketball court where they're dribbling and passing and stuff. That, you know, that's scary for a lot of kids, you know. But that's the kind of stuff I think that understanding your who your child is. And that's why I wrote the book Perfect Health for Kids, because how can you know who your child is, what they're doing, and then sort of help, by understanding that, get more insight into who they are, what they need to be safe and secure. And you can determine that. The question was, when can you determine their type? You can go on my website at lifespa.com and you can fill out the questionnaire. And as parents, you can be filling out those questionnaires, you know, every 6 months, every year. You can take with you and your husband or spouse, partner, whatever, take the questionnaire and, you know, see if you can, what questions you can answer. Then you tally it up and you begin to create a profile for your child. You know, you must see that with your children, how different they all are, right?
Oh, very different.
Yeah.
But she probably, at a pretty young age, I would think are pretty consistent. I mean, I could guess just in watching our three what they are.
Right.
I mean, we've got one that's very fiery and very, you know, thin and, you know, going all the time. And when he's happy as can be. And when he's mad, he's mad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, at a young age to start managing that and knowing what you can do to help him.
Right. No, it's so important to have a sense of what makes your child tick, and then to lay out, I think, you know, opportunities for them to experience themselves succeeding. You know, not that it's all about success, but it's more, I think, more about passion. Like, if you can get your kid passionate, like, right, how many of us have children? Like, if you can get your kid passionate about something other than a video game, that's like a miracle, right?
Yeah.
And it can happen. And I think it can happen by, you know, creating these experiences where kids are, or creating the experience where kids are really allowed to take some risks, you know, and do things that are, you know, organized sports and organized activities for kids isn't play. And, you know, I was involved with a program years ago called The Intelligence of Play. It's all about the things that happen to children when they're play. Free play, no structure. What can they do to play? How much play time do your kids have? And I wonder at camp, you know, is that like a whole month of just full-blown play time that changes their brain? Because we know that just fooling in the backyard and playing for 20, 30 minutes creates a huge difference in their brain chemistry and how they function and how they think. It's really important. But, you know, I imagine that camp is sort of a whole month of dipping this brain in the dye of this coherent safety of play that develops the brain.
Oh, you give, we do things called out camps where kids go out for a day or two, and, you know, the staff need to have a structure in case things don't go. But the benefits that are happening when you've got eight children that are building a city and a dam, and, you know, they've got a little creek going through there, and they've got all these rules, they're learning how to negotiate. They're, you know, they're tapping into that creativity, and they're just playing. They don't have a set end time. There's no one that's grading. You're not competing against the other one in a structured way. But, you know, we're building a dam to see how long we can hold the water off. And
My daughter, my 11-year-old, I guess, was there, and then she told me just the other night, she was saying we were walking on this hike, and there were two huge moose that were on the trail. And they were right in our trail, and there was no other way to get around them. We had to go through them, so we had to wait for them.
Yeah.
And they didn't move. Because they stayed for like a long, long time, and we missed dinner because the moose wouldn't get off the trail. You know, like, what kind of experience is that for? And moose are like, really.
Well, you do just wait.
You just wait. Even if it was an elk or a deer, you'd probably just wait, but those guys, you really wait. But, you know, that was just something that, you know, it created, you know, wow, you see this big, huge animal, you're in the wild. It's scary, it's challenging, you know, but it was, you know, again, sort of a rite of passage. She lived through it, she still remembers it. And I think that's the kind of stuff that I think our kids miss. When you look at these, you know, the social media that's taking place today, and how much, particularly for middle schoolers right now in our culture today, it's unbelievable. You haven't experienced that yet with your own kids yet, but boy, you know, it's just really an amazing thing. Kids are really being judged constantly by their peers. Kids will Instagram everything that they do so they can put it out there so it looks like they're the popular kid. I'm playing with this friend, we're going to this cool place, where everything's documented and everybody sees, oh, you're having so much fun, I wish I was you, I wish I was with you. It's a scary world we live in. I think as parents we have to navigate this scary world, and I think that the thing that we can do as parents is take our kids into the wilderness, hike, camp. Even if you just take your kids camping, you're going to get similar experience. But get them into the wilderness, and I think that's probably my biggest takeaway from this is get your children into the wilderness. Get them to experience that peace and calm that happens when you go into the woods or you're by a lake and you're sitting by a stream or whatever, and allow kids to just kind of bond a little bit and turn off all the volume. And it's great to have activity, but it's the silence that supports the activity. It's like a hurricane. The bigger the eye of the hurricane, the more powerful the storm. The bigger the sun that sits still, more planets, and the bigger they are. It's a law of nature that we have to provide for our kids to give a balance between being silent and still and active at the same time.
That's and teaching them how to be still, right?
Right, right.
I mean, I don't know if I heard somewhere where we're losing the ability to be bored. If you stand in line at Chipotle and it's 5 minutes long, you pull out your phone and you check your, you text someone and you check your email and
yeah.
You go on Facebook. And Catherine Adair, who wrote The Big Disconnect, we had a meeting with her, and she was saying that after 8 minutes on Facebook, they've done studies that you are more depressed than when you got on, because people think that that's someone else's life. Well, no, that's their highlight reel.
Right.
You don't post stuff that's not going great. That's only the best thing.
It's approval. We're hardwired to want that approval from someone else. And if they're doing it, then I'm not doing that. So therefore, I'm not good enough. I'm not having that experience. And this is, in Ayurveda, there's a yoga, breathing, meditation. You know, they all come from the same philosophy. And there's four words that define the philosophy: establish being, perform action, which means that first become still, become aware, pray, be still, be calm, meditate, whatever it is for you. Be in the wilderness, but find out how to get bored, and be mm-hmm. still. And then from that stillness, act, take action. And I think that's, to me, the magic at camp. It's the magic of the wilderness. It's the nature deficiency disorder that we have as a culture, that we, all of us, all parents, all of us can take our kids into the woods on a Saturday or Sunday and go for a hike or go camping overnight somewhere. These are the little things that we can all do. And, please, in our viewing page, leave some comments of ideas and strategies that you might think would be great ways, ideas that you've had to bring the stillness and the silence and back into your kids, make them feel safe so they can, like I said, open the petals of their flower and become, big, huge, amazing adults. Jeff, can you please tell us a little bit, if people want to get in touch with you or your camp and learn more about Chile Camp, how can they do that?
So our website is chile.com, chely.com. We're a 4-week program, so 27 days in Estes Park, Colorado, which is right at the gateway to Rocky Mountain National Park. Or you can call and speak with our enrollment manager, who was a camper, was a counselor, really understands the camp experience. And our phone number is 303-377-3616, or it's 1-800-CAMP-FUN to get more information. And our program's for 9 to 17-year-olds, but we really truly believe that the more children that are attending camps, wherever they are, the better off the world is. So it's not just about attending Chile or our program, but any program is very beneficial. So we just got a little note that we've got some other questions. So
yeah, we're
a fun conference. Oh, there we go.
Okay, so I have a couple, before we let Jeff go, I have a couple of questions here. My daughter has multiple interests in sports and art activities that she dives into, but then she decides she doesn't want to do it after 6 months or less. I want to encourage her experimenting in variety. I support each activity, but now I tell her anything she starts, she should stick with for a year before she decides to take it or leave it. What do you do with this enthusiastic but apparently frivolous child for her best chance of knowing herself and make her own decisions, although I'm still the parent who provides order to her 9-year-old life? What do you think about that, Jeff?
You know, I think at that age, I think, you know, we've got our kids playing everything that we can just to test it out.
Yeah.
I think it's okay to kind of test some of those different things out. I agree with, I remember at a young age, I didn't want to go to soccer practice, and my mom said, "You committed to it.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to go. We've committed to it." And we have that philosophy with our campers that if you committed to be at camp, you're going to finish this year. You don't have to come back next year. But I think that commitment is very important.
I think you're right. I mean, even if the commitment's for a month, and I think before a child should start a new venture, we should create a little contract, you know, nothing binding, perhaps, but binding sort of, but they have to commit. And they have to finish their commitment. I think that's really important for kids to learn, even if it's for a month or 3 months or one season, whatever it is. But, you know, committing for a whole year, that might be a lot. Committing for 6 months or 3 months as a test or a trial, that might be something. But I think putting a commitment, they have to do this much, and that's the test, I think it's a great way for them to get exposed. If it's not working out for them, they keep bouncing and bouncing and bouncing around until, and sometimes in life, people, you know, will tell you, I bounced around from career to career to career to career until I finally found the career I liked. You know, but they committed themselves to that, and they realized there was something else out there. And I think that is okay. I think, you know, as a parent, one of the best rules that I came across was rules without ambiguity, which means, you know, you make these rules and you got to stick to them. And it is an emotional thing. It isn't like you commuted, finish your commitment. It's just there's consequences that are non-emotional. The consequences can't be emotional. The love has to proceed and pervade everything. Love can't be a conditional thing. The kids feel that if I don't do really well in school or really well in sports or really well in music or dance or whatever, or drama, that I'm not going to be loved as much. And it's a very slippery slope to separate between love, your kid, feeling loved by the parent, and having that condition. Like, I know if I do straight A's, they're going to love me more. That's the kid's perception. So it's really a challenge for the parent to make sure the kid feels loved whether they had straight A's or not.
Yeah.
But from the kid's perspective, I know I'm getting loved way more if I get straight A's. That's how it works here. You know, and for a parent to kind of figure out how to not let that happen so they feel loved and supported even when they're not doing well and motivated so they can get back on track in school, that's what our job is as parents, is to figure that out. And I think that comes from, you know, rules that are unambiguous, that give them that structure that there are consequences, but those consequences are not emotional. Because emotion is where the love is, and you don't want to go there. You don't want to cross those lines. You want to make sure they feel safe and secure all the time to open their hearts to you and tell that you, as a parent, everything, you know, and not slip into a secret life. I don't know, this has turned into a parenting discussion, but, you know, I guess, you know, you got a bunch of kids. I had a bunch of kids. I guess that's where we are. How would we give a rite of passage to a child that suffers with severe anxiety? That's a great question. You know, kids, a lot of kids have anxiety, and there's lots of reasons why. But I think, you know, giving them experiences that make them feel safe, you know, and each kid is going to be different, right? How do you cross that line to what is, you know, their rite of passage is going to be a little bit of a challenge, but not a huge challenge, right? What would you say about a kid who's got anxiety?
Well, I think there's so many different levels of that, and there's a lot of different ways to provide a rite of passage, and making sure that it's the child and not the parent that, you know, is really worried about it. I think we see a lot of parents that are more worried about their child going through it than really the child is. Oh my gosh, they can't handle that. Well, let them try that, and they may fail, and it's going to be okay, and through that.
Would a rite of passage, let's say a child's really anxious, right? And anxious because maybe the kids in school, some kids don't like them, or they don't think some kid likes them, or whatever. What if the child, this might sound really corny, what if the child wrote, you know, a letter, a love letter, or not a love letter, but wrote a really nice letter telling this other person how much they liked them. You know, one of the rules we talk a lot about is I love you, but it's no concern of yours, that my nature is to be loving and joyful and kind. And there's good science behind that now. We know that microbes expand when you love and give, disappear when you're stressed out. We know oxytocin versus a destructive chemical called dopamine is produced when you love and give and care. We know epigenetically that when you love and you're around loving people, that your genes change. We know when you give with an expectation that there's no impact positive on your genetic code, but when you give without an expectation, just freely, it literally changes the expression of your genetic code. That's all science that I've written about. Powerful stuff. So we know that we're loving, kind, and giving. So that's what we want to think is, how can I get my kid to be that? Because the personality they created to be safe and secure isn't really their version. It isn't the authentic version of them. It's the protected version of them. So how do we create an environment safe enough for kids to be them? So let's say a kid feels unloved or unliked in school. What if the child who was anxious, for example, wrote and did something really nice for that for another person with no expectation and was coached through this by their parent? I've coached my kids to do that so many times. Like, you know, just tell them, you know, that you care for them and tell them how much you like them, tell them how much you appreciate them. You know, people are hardwired. They want to feel loved, right? And if you can, and if your nature is to love, then all you got to do is be yourself and they're going to feel it, right? That's all that has to happen. And that, I think, is what happens at camp, which is why it's so magical. It's why I wanted you here, because I wanted people to get this message. It's the magic of the wilderness, and it's magic with camp, but we can provide it and create it in our homes with our own kids. I think it's really important. A couple more questions here. I want to reduce computer time, social media. However, I also feel that the knowledge kids need with computers can be a great source for future careers. How do I create the balance? You answer it first. I'll give you my sense.
I think there are opportunities for that. I think there's a lot of families that have structured, this is computer time and this is not computer time. I mean, there's studies out there that, you know, watching a screen before bed is very detrimental for sleep, whether it's computer screen, your TV, whatever. So I mean, my wife works for Microsoft. We're very technical, but I think you can learn that in a structured setting, but you can also get away from
that. So one of the things, when your kids get a little older than yours, is what I know is, like, all the cell phones are plugged in the kitchen. All the computers are plugged in the kitchen. Nobody gets to sleep with their laptop next to their head. And my middle schooler, they give them iPads. That's part of their schooling. All of them have an iPad, which is like a disaster, because they're like Google chatting in class. Well,
children are getting up in the middle of the night to check their Facebook page and text. And there's they're in this paradox, because if you're sitting around the table, if we're having a family dinner, you're having a family dinner with your family, you're connecting, you're learning how to talk, you're learning how to read social cues, you're learning how to build relationships. And yet there's this whole world going on online that they need to check, right? You're back to your study that, are people liking my last Instagram post?
Or they're checking their phone under the table, you know?
Yeah. And not listening. I mean, you can't, more businesses now are saying you got to check all that stuff at meetings. And so I feel sorry for them, because if they're connecting and getting all the benefits of that connection, they're losing that. But if they go to their computer screen, they're sitting there by themselves and they're not connected with their family.
I think those are great rules. Some of the rules that we do is, like, no cell phones plugging in their bedrooms at all, or computers in their bedroom. No cell phones or technology at the dinner table. And no technology, which is tricky because they need technology to do their homework. But as much as we can, no social media during homework time. After that, then they can kick into social media. Mm-hmm. And then we do give them some perks. If they're doing really well in school and they're keeping it going, then, you know, some of those rules get lifted. They have a little more rope. So we require them. Their main job is to go to school, because in this day and age, if you don't tell them that, they don't get that message at school, like, this is about school. Because school is a social place. And they have to, you know, be reminded that, oh, you're supposed to learn and do really well, and, you know, and actually learn here. That's like the whole point, you know. Anyway, I want to just check and see if any more questions here. I think we're good.
While you're checking that, I'll mention, too, I think there's so much that you teach that can help us be better parents. I mean, whether it's meditating, whether it's taking care of ourselves, whether it's, you know, taking time out, getting good rest. If we as parents are staying up till 1 a.m. every night, we're not effective parents, you know?
No, it's so true. We have to, kids model behavior. That's, you know, the golden rule, I think, if I learned anything is if I'm, you know, practicing what I preach, which I do. I can't tell you how rewarding it is when my kids, when they come back from college, and I've got, I don't know how many have, four in college or something. I don't even know. About two in college and a bunch graduated. But when they were in college and they are in college, they call it, Dad, can you send me this herb? Can you send me that herb? You know, or can, you know, or I read your blog about eating this way. I'm going to try that. Or, you know, it's so rewarding when you live your passion and your life and they model that behavior and they come to that themselves, you know, or they come to becoming more spiritual themselves, where we haven't necessarily had to clobber it over their head so they can become connect, you know, at a deeper level in their life. That's been some of the most rewarding times when I see my kids beginning to, you know, really, you know, make decisions that are really beautiful and letting the real delicate part of them out, not living this very ballistic, competitive world we live. But having, you know, you have to live in that world, but also there's something real that oftentimes is overlooked and not accessed, not available for kids. And I think that's what it is. That's why I wrote my book, Perfect Love for Kids, because I felt like that was, you know, with all my six kids, our six kids, all the things in that book were the experiments that I tried on my kids for many, many years. So you get all the experiments and you get the benefit of what's worked is mostly in the book, but I threw a few funny ones in there that didn't work. You know, I wish there was a book about parenting when we, and I guess there are now more and more these days, but when we started out, it was like, wow, how do you do this? And I feel lucky to have, you know, six wonderful kids. And I think that what you provided for my family at Chile was one of the most important things, and my wife would agree 100%, to help them get on the right track, stay on the right track, and feel safe enough to, you know, be themselves in this world and find passion too. It's just absolutely amazing. So that's why I wanted to have you. I want to thank you for coming, and you know, we will stay in touch. And again, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.